Listen, I believe in Colin Kaepernick, and he deserves every chance in the world to become a quarterback in the National Football League. I still stand by it. If our coaches and general managers want to bring him in or want him to be the quarterback on this team, I would welcome him with open arms.
That was 4 weeks ago. Mark Davis, the owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, opening the door for his football team, if the coach and the GM so desire, to take a closer look at Colin Kaepernick. And this one came out of the blue on Wednesday afternoon. The Las Vegas Raiders working out Colin Kaepernick. The first workout he has received since becoming a free agent in 2017. Not a single team had even brought him in for a workout. The Seahawks brought him in for a visit, no workout. And the conclusion was, well, he's a starting quarterback in this league. We have a starting quarterback, so we have no use for him. Never mind the whole always compete motto that the Seahawks embrace. Always compete, except at the quarterback position, where we have some concern that there'd be some guys in the locker room that would think Colin Kaepernick is better than our current starter, and then we'd have a problem. That's why the Seahawks didn't want anything to do with Colin Kaepernick in 2017. That's the truth there. I don't know why they don't want anything to do with him now, because he'd be the best option they have, quite frankly, if he had a chance to learn the offense and get up to speed. If he still has the abilities he had 5 years ago, he's better than Geno Smith and Drew Locke right now, I think. I don't know. Maybe you disagree with me. But
well,
they
mean,
should
yeah,
at least,
right now, I totally
they should at least bring
you.
Him in.
Yeah.
But they should at least bring him in and see what he can do. Well, at least bring him in and see what he can do.
Sure. It's awesome day that this is happening. I mean, it's well overdue. No, I'm not ready to join you in that he's better than Geno Smith and Drew Locke at this point right now. No, definitely not ready to say that. Does he have the potential to be better than them? Certainly. We know that for sure. Yes, no doubt about it. But, you know, again, this is a little bit more than just, hey, getting back and riding on the bike here and like, oh, I got it, no problem. This is like we've never seen a quarterback take this amount of time off or have this amount of time off and go this long. So that's where it's different. And
didn't do it by choice, though. No, that's the problem I keep having with this. He's harmed by his absence, but his absence was wrongfully imposed upon him. And we had this conversation a couple of years ago. There's a certain point where he's out for so long, he's no longer desirable, but it's not his fault that he's been out for so long.
No, I know. It is. It's like, you know, the cart or the horse or the chicken or the egg. I know. It's bullcrap. It's totally bullcrap from that standpoint, 100%. But the fact of the matter is we see quarterbacks every year who miss 2 or 3 weeks and then it takes them a few weeks to get back going again and playing good. I mean, we saw Russell Wilson this year miss a few games, come back. I know he wasn't totally 100% when he came back, but really was not himself for 5 or 6 weeks because of the absence. So that's where I'm saying. But as far as the story itself and him getting the chance to work out, I mean, come on. He's been screwed over like nobody else in the history of football from that standpoint. You know, and it's great that he's finally going to get this chance. It really is. It's well, long overdue.
The Raiders have several other quarterbacks on the roster. They acquired Jarrett Stidham from the Patriots 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They also have Nick Mullins and Chase Garbers behind starter Derek Carr. And look, I don't view this as the ideal fit for what Colin Kaepernick wants to do, because he said this on the I Am Athlete podcast a few weeks back, and I thought that maybe it would hurt him in getting an opportunity, because he said, I'm willing to come in on basically the ground floor. It's not an exact quote, but close enough. And then when I prove I'm good enough, become the starter. And there was a presumptuousness to that that could turn a team off, because as we've said, there's two types of backups. The backup who knows he's there solely to be supportive and ready to go in the event the starter gets injured, and the backup who is there to try to knock the starter off his perch. Now, look, in Las Vegas, they're behind Derek Carr for now. That contract that he signed really gives the team a lot of freedom if he chooses to exercise it after this year. Remains to be seen whether the team will. There's no reason at this point to think it will. We talked about that when the contract details came out. But it doesn't seem like a place where there's an opportunity for Colin Kaepernick. If all of a sudden he shows up and it's his meteoric rise and he's, oh my God, look how great he's playing, maybe he'll be the starter. They're not going to put him on the field instead of Derek Carr. So I think what this does is it's the first toe in the water.
Sure.
And maybe it gives other teams that would have greater needs at the position cover.
Yeah.
Or at least an example.
Sure.
The world didn't end.
Right. The
right?
Raiders are still a team.
Your season tickets weren't all canceled.
Right, right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So and that's the potential benefit to it. And that's why I admire Mark Davis, Dave Ziegler, Josh McDaniels for doing this, because I don't think they really need him, but they've opened the door for the teams that maybe do to follow them through it.
Yeah, they break the ice. They break the barriers. No doubt about it. I mean, I'm with you. This is, I think, one, great for the NFL. It is great for the Raiders, 100%. No doubt about that. I think it's actually, like, even the best person that benefits from it from anybody is Josh McDaniels, in my opinion. You want to, like, endear yourself to the locker room and get street credit? You're working out Colin Kaepernick, and you might sign him, and you're the first coach to do that? Damn, he's gonna have guys in his locker room that might have been like giving them a side eye or how's this New England way, that are now gonna go into his corner and be like, all right, Josh McDaniels is cool with me. This is a big move that he's even given this guy a chance when the rest of the NFL won't. So that's where it's cool. And then I think on the football field, like you said it right, I mean, Kaepernick's gotta just be happy to get in a building and get somewhere first. Let's just dip the toe in, let's get going. Let's not talk about being a starter or a second string or anything like that. Let's just get in, get playing, show them you're a team guy. And this is a place to me that I do look at, Mike, I think, where, you know, you were kind of saying it, where, yeah, like they have a Stidham and a Mullins. Okay, great. They can play and, you know, they've got a little experience if we need them. But you're not blown away and going, oh, man, they're definitely our backups and we trust them with everything. And Kaepernick, we know, has the type of talent to where he can maybe get to that point. And that's where I think it's actually smart in all areas for the Raiders. And I give them a lot of credit, too. But I think it makes sense even football-wise for them.
And it really is amazing it took 5 years for it to happen. The NFL set up that group workout November of 2019. Both sides were to blame, I believe, in the failure of that to proceed as scheduled. There was some language on a release, on a waiver for presumably any physical injuries that would happen. Kaepernick's camp interpreted it more broadly, that the NFL was trying to get a silver bullet for a potential follow-up to the collusion lawsuit that resulted in a payment between $5 and $10 million to Colin Kaepernick because they did collude against him in violation of the CBA. And I think that neither side trusted the other, and that's the reason why it fell apart. So they both had dirt on their hands for that one.
Yeah. I mean, but I'm
still
not surprised that
like
he
I said
hasn't
at
got
the
a chance.
Time,
yeah.
Like I said at the time, any team could bring him for a workout at any time, but no one wants to do it because you run the risk of immediately activating 30% of your fan base against you because they hate Colin Kaepernick for kneeling during the national anthem. They refuse to accept why. They refuse to acknowledge that it was a proper exercise of his rights. They refuse to acknowledge that it was within the confines of the rules of the NFL. The NFL created the rule requiring players to be on the sideline but not requiring them to stand for the national anthem. They allowed that defect in the way they wrote the rule. They wrote the rule. Someone committed malpractice in writing that rule to allow that loophole. So he was fully within his rights to not stand. But there are folks who refuse to accept the fact that, you know, at a time when we're talking so much about the Second Amendment.
Oh, I know.
A lot of people don't have much regard for the First Amendment, Chris.
I love the hypocrisy and radical is crazy in our country. I'm okay to be radical here, but there, how dare you be radical? That's where it's all over the place there, that map. But I'm not surprised you didn't get a shot again. I'm not. I was one of those that I'm no joke, Mike. You can go back and look for some of the reasons you're saying here where when he kneeled, I went, this will be his last year in the NFL. I said it all the time at the time because we know that the NFL is very political and right-wingish that way. and it just wasn't going to fly with some of the owners, Jerry Jones, et cetera. I didn't think we would ever actually get to the point we're at today. I'm not. And I think a lot of things had to happen to finally get it there. And I think really for the NFL, this would be a good thing right now where they're taking haymakers about all certain types of subject from everywhere right now. This is one where maybe you get the goodwill of the people back on your side a little bit here. And I think that's really where it's good. I do want to ask you this, Mike. Like, I don't know. I mean, do they put more pressure on them? Do you have to sign them now that you worked them out? And I've thought about that, too. Like, you put tremendous pressure on yourself now that you've, you know, that's out there. He's worked out for you. And now I feel like there's so much pressure to, okay, sign him. Let him have his next chance here. Let him go into OTAs and get some reps. Don't you feel like there's going to be that pressure there from the Raiders now, though?
Yes, I do. Yeah. But I look at their roster. They got four quarterbacks. Five, unless one of your guys is injured and not participating, five is a lot to have. Four is the right number when you have 90 guys on the roster and you're trying to distribute the footballs to the various running backs, receivers, and tight ends during the reps you're taking and all the various drills that happen. So somebody would have to go. Would Chase Garber go? Would Nick Mullins go? Jarrett Stidham just got there, and they had to give up low-end draft pick compensation to get him, and there's familiarity there between Stidham and the coaching staff. So I think that when you step into that spotlight of working out Colin Kaepernick, number one,
right,
you're going to potentially activate a loud minority of your fan base on one side, and then if you don't sign him, you potentially activate a loud minority or a potentially loud minority of your fan base on the other side. Now, I think, and this is odd to me, and I thought of this earlier, when Colin Kaepernick had his grievance against the NFL, it occurred through the same type of process that the NFL always tries to force cases into. More on that coming up. But this is all under the CBA. When a player has a claim like this, it goes under the CBA, and it is an agreement between the union and the league that there'll be an arbitration, and it's not open and public like a court proceeding. But some things did trickle out. Some things made their way out, right, even though they kind of weren't supposed to. And one thing the NFL did, we reported on this at the time, the NFL did some surveys, some polling, they did some studies, and the group that was anti-Kaepernick from the fan base was the same size as the group that was pro-Kaepernick. They just chose to defer to the anti-Kaepernick crowd.
Right. Well, they were louder.
That's right. And they huffed and puffed and really did kind of blow the house down a little bit.
Definitely did.
Numbers were down 2016 and 17.
Yeah.
So
right.
that's the water's edge.
It became political. I mean, it became all about the politics.
The whole Jerry Jones, no news is bad news, and the edge of that is we would just as soon turn the page on this whole national anthem thing, and it did hurt the NFL's business. The percentage on the other side of the equation didn't do as much damage to the bottom line as the anti-Kaepernick.
Well, they didn't have the president on their side either, fanning the fire with fuel at the time. That was the other issue as well. I mean, our president was, you know, fanning the flames there and making it worse. And, of course, calling the players, you know, sons of bitches and, you know, people who were saying, you know, Nazi things. Hey, they're good dudes, good people over there. So, yeah, that kind of pissed some people off and caused some divides.
During that time, he did the deal with Nike that went well. Yeah. And his jersey continued to be among the highest selling in the NFL after he was out of the league for a season or
right.
two. That was amazing. And it occurred to me yesterday, you get a Kaepernick Raiders jersey.
What?
Seven's available. Seven's
what?
Available
what?
On the roster. You get seven
yeah.
Kaepernick in silver and black.
Ooh.
Holy crap.
Right.
You want to make money, NFL? I suppose you want to make money. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. I don't know. They probably don't want to get slaughtered on this issue. But you want to make some money, you get a Raiders jersey out there with Kaepernick. I wouldn't be surprised if people are already ordering personalized Kaepernick 7 Raiders jerseys.
I wouldn't either. I mean, it would fit the mantra of the Raiders. Just this from what we know about them through time, you know. Not afraid to take a chance on a guy that's, you know, maybe a little controversial or whatever. And yes, I mean, they kind of have that street cred about them anyways. I mean, really, they do. As far as, you know, it's when they were the L.A. Raiders, right? There was, like, you know, a lot of the rappers and everybody else would wear their stuff. It's people want to wear silver and black. It's cool. It looks cool when you wear it out, whatever. And then you add in the significance of the Colin Kaepernick situation. Yeah, I think you're going to get a demographic and a bunch of people in our country that are going to go, you know what? I'm going to go to the Raiders, or I'm going to get that jersey. I'm going to jump on. I like what they're doing. I mean, the Raiders, you know, this is what, two out of the last 3 years, 2 years in a row, Carl Nassib, you know, supporting him. That became a huge jersey sell. And then now Colin Kaepernick. I mean, this is where I'll give Mark Davis some credit. He's certainly breaking down some barriers as far as the NFL old world thoughts.
It just turned out yesterday, and this is the weirdest of coincidences. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the new general manager of the Vikings, I interviewed him starting at 3:30 Eastern time. And at the tail end of that, about 5 minutes to 4 o'clock Eastern, I asked him about Colin Kaepernick, because his first year in the NFL, 2013, yeah. Adofo-Mensah, San Francisco 49ers, he walks through the door. They're coming off of a Super Bowl appearance where they almost beat the Ravens. Colin Kaepernick is the starting quarterback. Your guy, Ron Jaworski, telling the world that Kaepernick may end up being the best quarterback of all time. He's a year away from getting a huge contract. He's firmly entrenched as a starter. He torches the Packers week one for 400-plus passing yards when they try to take away the run. And then they get together in the postseason on one of the coldest days ever at Lambeau Field. The 49ers go in there and win again.
Yeah.
Listen to Adofo-Mensah talking about Colin Kaepernick when I asked him specifically about what his take is on why it's been so long for Kaepernick to get an opportunity.
You know, look, I don't want to speak for Colin, so I can't speak to the time or the absence of, you know, him being sort of on the scene. I can only talk about my time in the building with him. And I can tell you that, you know, I remember we played Green Bay on the road at Green Bay my first year there. I forget how cold it was, but it's unbelievably cold. And it's pregame warmups. He comes out for the huddle and he flips off the jacket, short sleeves. And I remember turning to whoever I was with and I was like, we're winning this game. And you talk about leadership and following somebody through something. That's where that stamped to me who he was.
And he's still got that. And I think he's got even more credibility as a leader now than he did 9 years ago. If he gets an opportunity, yeah. If he earns an opportunity, if he ends up on a playing field at some point. But that struck me, and that was like 5 minutes literally before the news broke. Like after the news broke, the Vikings texted me like, did you know what was going on? Is that why you asked that question? Like, no.
Crazy.
It's just the stupidest, weirdest throwing of a dart that I've ever experienced, I think, or at least that I can remember, which isn't saying all that much. So there were some good things that Colin Kaepernick did. Once 49ers fired Jim Harbaugh and thought it would be a good idea to make Jim Tom Sula the head coach, and then thought it would be a good idea to make Chip Kelly the head coach, that's when everything fell apart. That's when this team that was moving back toward NFL royalty was plunged into dysfunction, and they dragged Colin Kaepernick with them. So there's plenty of people out there that point to his final season and they get grandeur with some of the stats. Look, number one, he went into the final offseason with three different injuries that required surgery.
Right.
He wasn't benched for Blaine Gabbert. He wasn't healthy when the season started. Blaine Gabbert was benched for him.
Right. They weren't that good.
And his numbers, under the circumstances, weren't bad.
What was
he
it?
Didn't have 16, anything around him.
16-4, right? Am I right? I mean,
touchdown passes, 4 interceptions.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, I mean, right. I mean, and man, if you really listened to the critics, then you would have thought it was six touchdowns and 16 interceptions, because there was just, you know, the public hate on him. But Mike, I mean, I'll definitely second you. I mean, Colin Kaepernick went through a 2 or 3 year period where he was one of the 5, 6 best quarterbacks in football, period. Again, he was electrifying. He was doing things that we had not seen in the history of the NFL. He was kind of doing Lamar Jackson-ish stuff with Greg Roman, you know, before Lamar Jackson. We were all going, wait, okay, there was Shanahan with the RG3 thing, and then Colin Kaepernick with Greg Roman and the 49ers. This is the first time we saw, like, whoa, what are these cool plays where they run the quarterback and, like, there's misdirection and, wow, whoa, I don't know how teams are going to stop this. Well, you're going to have to put the extra guy in the box because of the quarterback run. It became a thing because of his skill set. They had a schematical advantage that most teams or no teams in football had because of him, let alone to what you're saying, too, is he's big and he had an incredibly, and still does, I'm sure, incredibly strong arm. Like, incredibly strong arm. Like, definitely one of the strongest arms in football. So it made no sense football-wise for him to be out of the league. He was out of the league for one reason, and that was because he took the knee, and then nobody wanted to deal with the backlash and everything you've talked about. Josh McDaniels, guess what he likes? He likes quarterbacks that are big, that can stand in the pocket and throw lasers around the field like Tom Brady. And that's where I look at it and go, Kaepernick, he has a good workout with this group of backups that are there, that it's okay, yeah, Jared Stidham knows our system, but whoopity-doo. Okay, Nick Mullins, we know what he is. He's a third-string quarterback, really. You know, Kaepernick, you go, damn, we could make him third string. Maybe halfway through the year, he's ready to be the backup. Gosh, if we got late in the year, maybe he is our best option if Derek Carr got hurt in a game. I mean, so that's where this could go, and I'm hoping it does go that way.
It was a game in New England on a Sunday night, 2012, right after
I was
the Newtown
there.
School shooting,
mm-hmm.
where Kaepernick came in and kicked the crap out of the Patriots in prime time, ran up a big lead, Patriots came back,
right.
and Kaepernick still pulled it out
in the
end.
Coffin. Right, yeah.
And that was, my God, that was 2012. That was the year that Alex Smith has a concussion. Kaepernick comes in.
Right.
Alex Smith said, he's done. That's it.
Yeah.
Once Kaepernick started playing,
yeah.
bye-bye Alex Smith, you're getting traded after the season. Hello, Colin Kaepernick. It took him all the way to the Super Bowl. It was amazing. But that was what, it was like a rainy night in December.
Yep.
And he was phenomenal. And Josh McDaniels witnessed that.
No doubt. Witnessed it. I mean, it's one of those.
Was he with them in 2012?
Yes.
Was he back?
Yes, I think he was just coming back. I do. Yes, I think you're right. He'd just come back there, so he did get to witness that. And, yeah, I mean, hey, listen, that was a special team. You know, that's one you've heard me kind of wax poetically about that 49er team. It's still one of the best-looking teams I've ever seen in my life. And then when you put him at quarterback with as freaky as he was, you went, whoa. I mean, they were special. And, yeah, he was fearless. The team was fearless. And then, you know, not only could he run the scheme, but it's the things he could do outside the scheme that were special. You know, putting balls in windows that only a few quarterbacks in football could do, or running around the edge for 60 yards. And he was the only quarterback in football that could really do that. So, yeah, he has shown that he can play at a really high, special level. The big thing is what we started off the conversation. It's been 5 years. It's not going to be easy. I don't care how gifted you are to get back in the swing of things and playing football and quarterback. It's hard enough to be good when you're a backup or third stringer and you don't get enough reps, let alone doing that. So that's going to be the other piece of the puzzle we got to watch here.
Yeah, I mean, this is 5 key years of experience that he's lost. He's 34. He would be in that sweet spot right now if he had been playing all along, where the physical skills remain, the experience, the database that he can access in his brain of everything he's seen would have evolved to the point where you're coach on the field, and you carry that from 34 as long as your physical skills last, whether it's 37, 38, 39, whatever. He still has plenty of good football left in him if he had been playing all along. But he entered the league the same year as Andy Dalton. They were back-to-back selections in the second round in 2011, a year before Kirk Cousins and Russell Wilson, a year after, 2 years after Matthew Stafford, for crying out loud. So this is a guy who, if he was still playing, would still be in his prime and entering an area right now where he'd have the experience, where he'd be tough to stop because he'd walk up to the line of scrimmage and he would have a pretty good idea what you're going to try to do to stop him. And you win that guessing game with those physical tools, you have a huge edge.
Yeah,
but he doesn't have that now. For the last 5 years, all he's been doing is working out on his own, staying ready for this opportunity. And let me ask you this, Chris.
Yeah.
What teams out there, like, let's assume that the Raiders give him the workout, they don't sign him, but they've opened the door for the other teams to realize the football world will continue to spin if you do indeed give the guy a workout? What other teams should be interested in bringing him in?
Yeah, that's a good question, Mike.
Not to sign him, but yeah, to see what he has. Right.
Well, to me, like, it would be that type of team we're talking about that we've kind of discussed here, where you got a starter that is, he's the man, we all know it. He's not threatened or worried about, oh, gosh, the other guy in the locker room here that plays quarterback, he's got a bigger crowd of media around him every day. So it's going to have to be that kind of guy, I think. You're going to have to have a guy that's established and confident in who he is. And then I think kind of like what we're talking about with the backup quarterback situation to a degree of just like, hey, we got okay, but we don't got anything special. Let's see if we can get this guy in here to do that and maybe be special. You know, so there's a number of places I think of. I mean, one, Dallas would be a place, but I know that's not going to happen. But the scenario's right. You know, when I first heard it yesterday, too, I thought, well, would Philadelphia think about this? They're kind of running that offense, certainly. Baltimore has come to my mind, too, with Greg Roman and Lamar Jackson and all of that. I think you're kind of, you know, you're good there. Lamar's the guy. He's the man. But I think that's kind of the formula I would be comfortable with. I think if I was a head coach, would be something along those lines.
You know, I hesitate to say this.
What?
Because I really don't feel like dealing with Tuanon. But,
well, yeah, he'd be like, he'd take a chance and he'd fit there what they want to do and how they want to play and they're going to move the quarterback and all that. Yeah. I get that, but I don't think that they won't do it because of what you're saying. They're the perfect example of the opposite, because he's going to go there, and they're all going to go, damn, he's faster than Tua, and damn, he's throwing lasers out here, and I it's going to be threatening to Tua. To me, Tua's not established enough yet for that spectacle, at least in my opinion.
Would Derek Carr be able to handle Colin Kaepernick getting all that attention?
I think he can. Think Derek Carr proved it to me the last few years with how he handled Gruden and everything. Like, he's the general. He's got it. He's the sheriff. There's no doubt. So I do think he can handle it. I know, you know, hey, we all look at Derek Carr sometimes and go, oh, he's a nerd. He's a dork. He is who he is. He owns it, and he loves football. And as we've seen, the team loves him. We know that. We hear it from too many people, and they say it too much. He has got a way about him that players like, a.k.a. Devontae Adams left Aaron Rodgers to go there to be with him. And I think that says a lot about the guy, too.
Before we pivot to the news that was created yesterday by John Gruden, I do want to say one thing. We didn't waste 10 minutes at the top of the show talking about whatever like we sometimes do, because we got right into the news.
Yeah.
But I will say this.
What?
And it remains to be seen what kind of reaction we get from the time we've spent today talking about Colin Kaepernick. Will I have emails saying, why are you talking about Colin Kaepernick? Well, there's a reason to talk about it. He had a workout yesterday for the first time in more than 5 years. And what happens next? So we had every reason to talk about it. There will be people who complain about it. I was convinced yesterday, after all the time we spent out of the gates talking about the latest American mass murder in Uvalde, Texas, that
yeah,
there would be equal parts stick to sports along with supportive emails.
I thought so too. Yeah.
Let me tell you something. And it's still happening today.
It's good. You got good
Not
feedback, right?
A single negative response
yeah.
via email.
Not
a single one. Now, Twitter, I haven't really looked, but I'm sure that, you know,
yeah,
Twitter is going to Twitter. But the emails that I have gotten, every single one, and there haven't been just two or three, every single one of them has been positive to the messages we were sending, to the idea that enough, that change needs to come, that we can't get complacent or numb, and that real steps need to be taken to ensure that weapons of war cannot be purchased on a kid who just happened to turn 18 and wants to go buy himself something that is designed for one thing and one thing only.
To kill.
To kill a whole lot of people quickly.
Right. Right. It's encouraging,
that was very
Mike.
Encouraging.
When you sent the text yesterday to say you're getting positive reviews, I was – because, you know, shows like that yesterday, they're stressful. They are. I do worry about the backlash. I can't be totally honest all the time with some of the thoughts and the things I really want to say, because I don't want to get fired or really piss everybody off at a degree. So I was wondering where it was going to go. But I do think, like, the one thing, you know, to your what you're alluding to is – I think, like, it's official. I do think people maybe have had enough here, and that's what I think you saw in your email box, where it's finally like, we don't give a damn anymore. Right, left, whatever party, whatever. This crap has got to end, and I think everybody's at their wit's end with this, with all this stuff.
At a bare minimum, the ability of an 18-year-old kid to walk into a store and buy a weapon of war. You know, most other guns have alternative reasons. Shotgun, you're going hunting. Deer rifle, going hunting. Handgun, self-defense. These assault rifles are designed for one thing and one thing only: to kill as many people as possible, as quickly as possible. That's why they're designed. That's why they're there.
And to 18-year-olds, right, who, like, I wouldn't, like, most of them, I'm not letting them do anything for me in life, anything. I don't trust you, you're 18, but we're going to give you the deadliest killing machine on the planet. Yeah, sure.
Can't drink yet.
Right, but you could go out and point a gun and kill a bunch of people in 7.4 seconds. I know, it's crazy. It's insane when you say some of the things out loud.
Not to go back down that path again, though, I just wanted to express appreciation to everybody who listened and who heard and who let us know. Because when we finish 35, 40 minutes of talk like that, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. Right.
And we still got a show to do. I'm beat up. I'm worn out because you're watching everything you say because you don't want to turn everything upside down. But it was very encouraging all day long, and it's still lasting into the day.
Good.
People who saw the show and understand the message we're sending, agree with the message we're sending. Reasonable people of goodwill and sound mind should all agree with that message. This shouldn't be something that feels like we're tiptoeing through a minefield. This should be something on which 95% plus of the population agrees. If we want to live peacefully and safely in America, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, there's a place where your liberty bumps up against my life, and my life needs to win. And this is one of those areas. So let's see. Let's see how that goes. All right.
Speaking of liberties.
John Gruden.
Yeah.
Now, before we start down the John Gruden lawsuit against the NFL path, we need to establish that he got fired because he sent some highly inappropriate emails.
Yeah. Crappy
to
language.
Bruce Allen,
right,
the former executive and ultimately president of the Washington football team, now the Washington Commanders. 2011, Gruden was working at ESPN, not working for any team, but he sent these emails, hateful, nasty, over the top, just vile stuff. Offensive language in every direction. And for the substance of the statements that he articulated, he deserves a lot, right?
That's right. No doubt. And
he's gotten it. He's endured it.
He has.
He's gotten what he deserved.
Maybe and maybe more.
The other side of the coin.
Yeah.
And this is where his lawsuit comes from. And this is where you have to always respect the rights of someone, no matter how unpopular they may be, or no matter how ugly the conduct they engaged in, because people still have rights.
Right.
And it's more important to respect their rights when it's very tempting to say, screw them.
Yeah, screw you.
They got what they deserve.
No rights. You're
screw
your
rights.
Right. Yeah.
Screw
right.
your rights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That ain't fair.
So John Gruden still has rights.
Right.
And his lawsuit against the NFL and Roger Goodell, filed in Nevada, argues that the league office, the NFL, interfered with his business relationship with the Raiders by leaking emails that forced him out. That once those emails came out, once they were handed to the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and again, this isn't a case of high-level sleuthing by the Times or the Wall Street Journal. Nobody's digging around in dumpsters, piecing together shredded documents. This is, and there are some in the business who get mad when I say that because they like to maintain this allure that there's some great mystery to what we do. Bullshit. We're handed things all the time. 98% of the news that is broken in the NFL world is something that someone handed to a reporter, affirmatively, without the reporter even asking it. It's something that someone wants to get out.
Yep.
Either to curry favor with the reporter so the reporter doesn't exercise his or her discretion to criticize at some point, and that's part of the price you pay when you're in this quid pro quo trade so you can get the release 5 minutes before it gets sent out by the team. Or just, hey, I want to screw this guy. Screw John Gruden. I want to get this out there. How do I do it? I'll give it to the media. Who do I give it to? Well, let me give it to some newspapers that really have some heft,
yeah,
that have gravitas. The Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. Let's give it to them. And then as soon as those emails are out there, and it started with a few, right? And I think what they were doing, if I think back to that time in October, and it's all happening during football season, Chris, but what they were doing is, you know, it's like the old, you know, I'm showing you my sword a little bit. You know, they're pulling the sword out of the sheath. Hey, look what we got here, John Gruden. You better walk away while you can. Hey, Mark Davis, you better get rid of this guy while you can. Oh, you're not going to? Well, here's more of the sword. And now you got to walk away. I feel like that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Somebody was leaking these
degrees, yeah,
in levels until there was no choice.
Right.
See, Mark, and look, whether you agree or disagree with what happened to John Gruden, Mark Davis should have been able to make that decision without those emails becoming public, because these were documents from this 650,000 email trove that they refused to release to the public. So all that stuff's going to be secret. The stuff about Gruden should have been secret too. And Mark Davis should have been able to make his decision about John Gruden without being pushed to do it by having everyone see these emails. And it's like, well, we got no choice. He's got to go. Can't stay. Once these are out, there's no way you can stay. I can't even make a decision now. I can't say, well, it was 2011. You weren't even working for me. It's not relevant to me, right? I can't do that. You're out. You're gone. You got to go. You can't stay. And that's the argument. Gruden believes the NFL forced Mark Davis's hand, forced Gruden out by leaking these emails. So bottom line.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that the emails were known any time before this a little bit, that they were there, like you're saying? And the fact that maybe Mark Davis didn't react the way they want, they felt like they had to release maybe more of them? You know, it's something I never really thought about, but I was sitting there listening to you as you go. Maybe they realized Mark Davis wasn't going to make the right decision. Again, I'm just throwing this out there for conversation, for thought. I don't know that. But it's just something that has crossed my brain, and it did there when you were talking about this.
I was told at the time that the league knew about them in June. Now, I don't know why it wasn't brought to a head in June.
Mm-hmm.
And the week that this was all happening, the NFL was in the process of putting together a packet of information that was sent to Mark Davis based upon what was found in these emails,
right,
from,
right,
John Gruden. You could argue the mere act of carving off the emails from one company's server that are being regarded as private by the NFL as the conduit from one independent company to another independent company and sharing that information, right? That in and of itself, you could argue, is tortious interference with John Gruden's business relationship with his current employer.
Yeah.
I mean, let's try to think of a different context here, and I'm doing this on the fly, so bear with me.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
Let's say that John Gruden was an executive at Coca-Cola.
Right.
Okay? Not even that. It's not even that extreme. My God, it's worse than that from the standpoint of interference by the league. Let's say John Gruden wasn't working for anybody, and he sent some emails to a buddy at Coca-Cola.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Some inappropriate emails to a buddy at Coca-Cola. And then a decade later, he's working for Pepsi. And there's a trade association out there, the American Soft Drink Manufacturers Association. And they catch wind of the emails that were sent by John Gruden to Coca-Cola. And they decide they're going to send him to Pepsi to get the guy in trouble. I mean, just on the surface,
yeah,
there's something about it that stinks.
Yeah, no doubt.
Again, not defending John Gruden.
Oh, right, right.
But the NFL just serving as the conduit to Mark Davis in the first place stinks. But then when Mark Davis doesn't do what you want him to do, leaking these things to reporters, if this is true, if the allegations are true, leaking these things to reporters to get him fired, That's despicable. It's heinous. It's every bit as bad as the content of the emails that John Gruden sent. It's weaponizing these documents that are supposedly secret with the end in mind of getting John Gruden out of his job. I got a problem with what John Gruden did, but I got a problem with what was done to him.
Yeah, you can have both. I think it's fair to have both feelings there. To go, yeah, that ain't cool, John Gruden, Coach Gruden, that ain't cool. That language, no doubt. I mean, that's wrong, not cool. But you can also go, damn, that's really screwed up by the NFL too. There's no doubt about it. And both things can be true, as Pete's saying in my ear. And, you know, again, where I don't want it to be misconstrued here either, but man, I was so happy to see this news yesterday. And I know it's not final yet, but oh my gosh. I mean, if Gruden can win this, this is going to be great. It's going to be something you've talked about all the time. We're going to be out of the kangaroo court. We're going to get to hear some of their dirty details of the NFL. Some of their dirty laundry is going to be made public. And you don't see that happen with the NFL very much. But this one might be the one that does it.
And that's what happened yesterday. The same day that Colin Kaepernick got his workout with the Raiders, John Gruden went to court. They had a hearing on two motions made by the NFL. Motion to dismiss his lawsuit entirely for failure to state a claim. Basically, hey, if everything in there is true, he still can't get relief in this court system. That motion was denied by the judge from the bench during the hearing. And also the motion to compel arbitration, the motion to send the case to Roger Goodell's secret rigged kangaroo court. I'm going to keep calling it that, folks. I don't care if you don't like it. It's what it is. NFL secret rigged kangaroo court. That's where they wanted it to be, to keep it all quiet, to keep it all hidden, and to get the outcome they want. The judge denied that too. From the bench, Chris.
Yeah, explain that, because
rarely bang the gavel and issue a ruling from the bench. Even Wapner took 5 minutes to go back to go back to his room and come back and give you a decision. Rarely does a judge, I mean, that is spiking the football in the face of the losing party when you issue the ruling from the bench. They typically, and I'd be
act
lying
like they're
if
thinking
I said
about
I,
it.
I'd be lying. I'd be lying if I said it hasn't happened to me on both sides, frankly, at one time or another during the 19 years I practiced law. But usually they take the case under advisement. We'll take it under advisement, and then I'll get back to you with my decision, and then a week or two later you get the decision. No, this is the judge did her homework. She knew where the wind was blowing. Right. She knew where this outcome needed to go. She went to the hearing and she heard absolutely nothing from the NFL's lawyers to change her mind. Boom. Knock on wood if you're with me. Boom.
Yeah.
Bang the gavel. And she's with John Gruden. And now, the NFL's already said they're going to appeal.
Of course.
And Chris, the St. Louis relocation lawsuit against the NFL and the Rams was tied up in court for 5 years on the question of whether or not St. Louis would have to arbitrate. They went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court on that issue. They will push and push and push as far as they can, because they don't want the light of day to be exposed to these facts. They don't want this stuff coming out. They don't want us to know who ordered the code red. They want it all to go into their secret rigged kangaroo process. So they will fight and fight and fight and fight and take it to the highest court in the land to try to keep from having to fight John Gruden in open court. I guarantee you that. They did it with St. Louis. No doubt. They'll do it with Gruden.
Right? I mean, this is to me where the NFL starts to show their real power. And really the oligarchs start to show, oh, wait, yeah, I got this judge and this lawyer and the president and everybody here right on speed dial. We need to call some people now and really go full through. Like, that's where I think the NFL goes to another level here. This
is when they act a lot like a certain failed former politician who can't admit that he was wrong.
Well, they're going to pull
sue
all
and sue
strings.
And sue and sue and go to every court possible and lose in all but one of them. And then that's what the NFL will do. They will not acknowledge they were wrong.
Right.
They will not acknowledge that the case should play out in court. They will fight and they will fight and they will fight, because they don't want to fight John Gruden in court. They don't want this stuff coming out. And we want it to.
Yeah.
We want it to, for a couple of reasons. One, We want to know what happened. We want the truth, and we know we're not going to get the truth if it plays out in the secret rigged kangaroo court of Roger Goodell. And number two, sometimes it's nice to see Big Shield get its comeuppance when somebody did something they shouldn't have done. And the bottom line is, whoever it was, whether it was the NFL, whether it was Roger Goodell, whether it was Daniel Snyder, whoever ordered the code red deserves to be exposed and held accountable for it.
It wasn't well thought out.
It's far more likely to happen in court than in the secret rigged kangaroo court.
Yeah, no, I hope we can get there. I mean, I'm hopeful, but I don't know if I really believe that we will. I don't. I mean, again, that, like you've discussed and like we've said, this is where the NFL seems to pull all the right strings and has, you know, incredible power.
Not against St. Louis.
I know.
Not against St. Louis.
So that's where I was going to say, like, though, to that, like, you know, I mean, the magnitude, the fact that it's Gruden. I mean, everybody knows John Gruden. That, and then that this is also connected to the Washington thing here. I don't know. Do you think because of the public nature of all this and some of the names and how long the story is going to be going here, do you think that this is one that the NFL might have a harder time kind of swiping under the rug compared to other ones in other years?
Look, they've already lost at the district court level, at the lowest court level. We'll see what the appeals courts do in Nevada. I didn't think their argument was very strong in the first place. They're trying to bootstrap together this notion that John Gruden is bound by the NFL's constitution and bylaws to pursue the claim through arbitration there. It was a weak argument in the first place. But again, they're going to throw everything they have at this because the mandate's going to be keep this thing out of court. Whatever we do, spend whatever it takes. We can't allow this thing to be in court. So it's one thing to have a coaching contract that has clear language in it requiring you to pursue your claims in arbitration. That's a little bit harder to wiggle out from under. The argument the NFL was trying to make against Gruden, to me, was a lot more difficult for the league. So I'm holding out hope. Even if it takes 5 years,
right,
at the end of the day, we're going to get access to things. We're going to find out about things. And then it's going to be like St. Louis, where, for example, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch gets documents showing that when Stan Kroenke bought the land at Hollywood Park, that he knew damn well he wanted to build a stadium and move the Rams there. And the Rams and the league got together and said, how do we keep this secret? And, well, we just can't say anything about it. And Roger Goodell goes to a press conference and acts like he doesn't know anything about it, even though he does. That's what the documents show. And then 5 years later, Roger Goodell at a press conference confronted with that, basically pulls the shaggy Eddie Murphy line and says, it wasn't me. Didn't do it. And they move on to the next question. We may be there 5 years from now where some stuff comes out that forces Roger Goodell, if he's still the commissioner then, to act like he didn't say what he said, when the documents will show that it was said, that it was done. We only get access to that if John Gruden ultimately prevails. So, Team Gruden, sorry, we both got our black on today.
We are. I guess we're Raiders fans. First we're Raiders fans. We're wearing black because of the Raiders. That's why.
On this point of exposing what happened,
right,
what the NFL did, it's not Team Gruden on the standpoint of what he did, but both things can be true. He did something wrong. They did something wrong. Today is about them doing something wrong and having it exposed. So, from that perspective, Team Gruden.
Yeah.
And only from that perspective.
Yep.
And Team Raiders. Go Raiders.
The Raiders.
And Gruden said yesterday, coming out of court, we're going to let the process take care of itself. Good luck to the Raiders. Go Raiders.
I love it.
I don't have anything else to comment on. The process will take care of itself. It's good to be back in Vegas. I'm going to go see friends tonight. Last night was a cause for celebration. Again, what he did was wrong, but what was done to him, the way it was done, was wrong. And it's not the first time something like that's happened. And hopefully this time someone's hand was caught in the cookie jar, just like Gruden's was, and he got his. Somebody else did something they shouldn't have done, and maybe they're going to get theirs. We'll see. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, some important updates, OTA style, regarding some pretty big-name quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, Ryan Tannehill. We'll discuss that when PFT Live continues right after this.